it on his mind.
Only at your... There's a heart...
Your neighborhood gives me the creeps. Your neighborhood gives me the creeps. Ooh, your neighborhood gives me the creeps.
All right, welcome once again to Chicago Unbelievable. This should be an epic edition of the podcast. I am here with Derek.
Hello.
Hector.
Yo.
And Aaron.
Hello.
And we are about to go check out an H.H. Holmes body dump. H.H. Holmes is the notorious serial killer, the first one known to have operated in the United States. If you've read Devil in the White City, you probably know all about him. We're going to be going out to a place that he said was a glass-bending factory, but was more likely used for cremations. It's been the subject of major research. I started taking people there just on my historical tours, but so much weird stuff happened there that I had to add it to my ghost tours. And while we're there, we're actually going to be doing a chat via Skype with Jeff Mudgett, H.H. Holmes' great-great-grandson, who has a new book called Bloodstains, and theorizes that H.H. Holmes was also Jack the Ripper, and that it was not him on the gallows in 1896, but he actually survived well beyond that. I'm not sure if I'm quite convinced on either of those myself. I'm kind of on the record as thinking that most of the Holmes stuff is kind of exaggerated, but you never know. The guy is like a rabbit hole. You start researching him and you just find one new alias after another, one new scheme he was involved in after another. Mm-hmm. How many people this guy killed will never be known. Estimates range from about 24 to about 200. Mm-hmm. But anyway, where are we?
This place is called Nick's Pit Stop. It's at 2011 North Damon Avenue. They specialize in chicken. It's actually very good food here. So
yeah, I'm digging it here.
Yeah, it's really nice. Award-winning, so it's just a short hop and a skip and a jump away from where we're going to be, so.
Yep. Love it. All right, let's pile into the car. Let's head out to what was once called Sobieski Street and check out the body dump. And we'll tell a little bit of the stories that have taken place here. Alright, we have now piled into Hector's car and we are about to take off. So I'll tell a little bit of the story. In 1885 or so, a guy by the name of Herman Webster Mudgett, better known by his alias H.H. Holmes, came to Chicago and got work in a pharmacy. A few years later, he broke ground for a block-long building on 63rd Street that he called the World's Fair Hotel. It was supposed to be a hotel that he had built for people coming to the World's Fair in Chicago in 1893, but the rest of the world would come to know this place as the Murder Castle. The second floor was loaded with everything you could need to kill a person. There were trap doors, secret passages, secret rooms. There was an airtight, soundproof asphyxiation chamber. There were gas lines running into several of the rooms that could be controlled from Holmes' private apartment. Everything you need. What he was really into doing was insurance swindling. He would kill people, then collect life insurance money from them, and then sell the body to a medical school to make even more money off of it. So, the police actually knew about the building before the fair even started. He had bought a lot of furniture on credit and never paid for it, and hidden it in secret rooms. Eventually, a guy who worked in the castle went to his creditors and said, "Hey, I know where the furniture is, and for $50, I'll show it to you." So they paid him the $50, and he showed them a secret chamber in between the first and second floor. And as they carted it away, he said, "Hey, for another $50, I'll show you something even worse." They didn't pay him that $50. If they had, he might have shown them what the newspapers eventually labeled the Black Closet, the Asphyxiation Chamber, the Room of the Three Corpses, the Maze, the Death Chute, the Dummy Elevator for Lowering Bodies, all kinds of nasty stuff. Eventually, he got involved in a major swindle where he killed one of his partners, a guy by the name of Benjamin Peitzel, and took custody of three of his kids. When the police caught up with him a few months later, they realized he no longer had these kids in custody. He told them all, I gave them to my wife, Minnie Williams. She took them to England. Everything's fine. But nobody quite believed him, and eventually they found Alice and Nellie, the two girls, buried in a trunk under a cellar in Toronto. Howard, the boy, was found burned alive and shoved up a chimney in Indiana. It was at this point that they remembered that he had this building back in Chicago that was full of secret passages and decided maybe they ought to dig it up. Down in the basement, they found everything you could need to get rid of a dead body. There was an acid pit where bodies could be dissolved. There was a quick lime crime pit where bodies could be dissolved, only not quite as fast. There was a crematory oven and even a couple of bones buried, along with a bunch of soup bones that Holmes had scattered down there just so when they found bones, he could say it was just animal bones. So, I've actually kind of come to the conclusion that the entire basement of the murder castle might have actually just been a decoy. They found all of this stuff, but not a lot of evidence that it had actually been used very much. It's entirely possible that he just threw some of those bones down there and had all of those things, because he knew that eventually he was going to get investigated. And this would keep them occupied for about 2 weeks, which gave his henchman, a guy named Pat Quinlan, plenty of time to empty out the real body dump, which was 10 miles north. They were just finishing the investigation of this place when they discovered that he had a building that he said was a glass-bending factory, but was probably actually used for cremations, up on the north side on what was then called Sobieski Street. It's now a little dead-end stretch of Seeley Avenue. Now, by the time the cops broke in, they didn't really find much other than some of Minnie Williams' stuff, and a whole bunch of stuff from Holmes' other schemes, but there was evidence, based on the holes in the floor and a diagram they found, that there had recently been a gigantic furnace running the entire length of the place. Now, we theorized that a few different girls might have actually been killed here just by the location. Minnie Williams lived very close by at an apartment on Wrightwood. Anna Williams, her sister, would probably be logical for her to have been killed in the same place. And just a few blocks away from here, Holmes actually operated a candy store, Frank Wilde's Fruit and Candy. A couple of girls from that disappeared. One of them was named Emily Van Tassel, though in a... There's a kind of an interesting thing I'm dealing with today. In Holmes' confession that he wrote, he said her name was Rosine Van Jacent. But then when the confession was published in other papers, they changed the name to Anna Van Tassent, for reasons entirely unexplained. But anyway, Hector and I started taking people here on historical tours just as a historical curiosity, but eventually so many strange things happened here we actually had to add it onto our ghost tours. Hector, you remember some of the things here?
I do remember the hawk with the dove in its mouth.
There were like three of them.
There was three of them. Three hawks, three doves. I do remember the random chickens.
Yeah, one night we pulled up here, there were chickens running around, which is rather, even in an isolated part of Chicago like this, and it's not even that isolated, it just looks like it from down the dead end street.
Yeah, and it's right next to the railroad tracks, and there's a highway right by it, so there's no way these chickens should have survived this to this area.
Right.
There was also an incident where there was a young girl with us, and she was kind of freaking out, and we started getting a lot of activity. Remember,
yeah.
Voices.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of orbs in pictures, which
it's a pretty dusty area.
It is a pretty dusty area, but there was something weird in the air that night.
Yeah,
and it was just unbelievably like spooky.
Yeah.
That night, so I remember that.
There was also the night we were. It was with you that I saw the woman in the black dress, right?
I think so, yeah.
We were pulling out of the place. There's this woman in a black dress standing in the middle of the road. And I thought, who's the dummy? You know, we're pulling up to her with a bus. So at about the last second, she kind of gingerly stepped between a couple of cars. I opened the bus door so I could, you know, joke around with her a little bit, as I do. But she was just gone.
Yeah, she disappeared.
Yeah, that's not the only time something quite like that has happened either. One night I was in a small bus here. We were actually backing in. As we did, everybody heard and felt a giant thud at the back of the bus.
Oh, I remember that.
Actually, I think that was with Happy Dave, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I remember you guys telling me. I was like, whoa.
Yeah, I called you from right after because we heard this giant thud. And about half the people on the bus heard a scream. I didn't hear a scream, but I was, you know, terrified that we'd hit somebody, which, you know, would have been just like Happy.
Right.
So I came out hoping it was just a fire hydrant, a tree, or the hill at the back of the road, the dumpster, something, but there was nothing there. Fresh snow on the ground, no tracks in the snow, nothing. We had hit nothing. Wow. Which is what you want to hit, rather than an actual person.
Yeah, you don't want to hear the thud and the screaming, but... Yeah.
But it's kind of difficult to determine exactly where the glass bending factory was. From our car right here, we can look out at there's a fire hydrant, and shortly behind that, there's some bricks in the ground that a couple of our archaeologists have told us were from the 1890s. But a more likely spot is over on the other side here. There's this giant metal garage. People who work in the garage or used to work in the garage have been on my tour. They told me it was always really spooky at night, but they could never think of why it would be all that spooky. But according to the Sanborn Fire Insurance map from 1914, there was still a house and a building on that spot that exactly matched the dimensions of the glass bending factory and the house as described by the newspapers at the time. So, yeah, this could have been, in fact, H.H. Holmes' main body dump. It could have been more bodies disposed of here than there actually were at the castle. And it kind of stands to reason he probably would have killed people here, too. This guy killed all over the place. Most serial killers have a type that they like to kill and a certain method that they like to use. Holmes killed men, women, and children, and he did it in all sorts of different ways.
I think he just wanted to see how people died.
Yeah.
I think for him it was just a scientific
You think
thing.
So?
Yeah. Because it's like the method of death is always different in every single case. It was almost frightening how cold he was towards the bodies, as if they weren't even human for him.
Right, like those two girls he asphyxiated in a trunk, the kid he burned. One woman I think he actually shot.
Yeah.
One of the skeletons they found had a bullet hole in the head.
There was the couple who owned the building beforehand, what happened to them.
Like, yeah, we're not really sure.
We're still not sure, but it's like, yeah, it's like he was just indiscriminate. He didn't care who he killed. So, yeah, I think he just wanted to watch people die.
Yep.
You know, in many different ways.
Yeah, and some people he actually locked away in the asphyxiation chamber so he wouldn't have even seen it.
That's scary.
But, yeah.
If you think about it, that's scary. That's the complete, like, that's just, I don't care.
Yeah.
At that point. It's like, wow.
And Devil in the White City, it speculates, I think it was when they're talking about how they guessed maybe he killed Anna Williams, just locking her in the vault, but then one day just opening up to smile and say, yes, I did this on purpose, and then shutting the door again. And that's one of those things. Devil in the White City, if you read the end notes, he's very upfront about the parts that he's just kind of making up based on available evidence.
Right.
It's a gripping, gripping book. It doesn't get all of the facts right, and he's pretty upfront about that. But
he's told a good story, and it's going to be made into a film. You know?
Yeah, I keep hearing that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we are actually just about to Skype our way in to talk to Jeff Mudgett on the phone, so we will be right back in just 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the meantime, let's get the investigation going, shall we? Let's step outside.
Daylight is gone. There are cackles and screams that come back in my dreams of the girl who is all alone. The neighborhood gives me the creeps. The neighborhood gives me the creeps.
Hey, Adam.
Hi, Jeff. Hey, Jeff, how are you doing?
Good, good.
All right, we are actually at Sobieski Street right now. Let me kind of turn the camera and show you around.
Before we start, let me say it's a pleasure working with you and your team tonight. I'm really excited about this.
Thanks. We are too. Absolutely. All right, so we are on Sobieski Street, or what used to be called Sobieski Street. The actual location of the glassbending factory was probably right about here where this garage is now. If you can see that. Hector's shining a laser grid on it right now. But, Jeff, why don't you tell us a bit about Bloodstains, your book?
Well, Bloodstains... There are, as you know, there are a number of books about Holmes, dozens, in fact, already out, Devil in the White City, Depraved, the list goes on and on.
Mm-hmm.
My book is more about me discovering in midlife from a secret my grandfather revealed that we were direct descendants of the monster, and the psychological journey I went on after that, trying to find out my true identity and my destiny, even. So, it's a scary read, and I'm quite proud of it.
Yeah, that must have been quite a thing to find out.
Exactly, and it had to do with the stigma, as you might imagine, in Chicago back then, and my family basically running away to California to try to get away from it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, even though the book is essentially based on a true story novel, you do theorize, like it says in the book, that Holmes was also Jack the Ripper.
There's no doubt the book is fiction based on a true story, and it was characterized that way for a number of reasons, including some legal ones. What we are finding, Adam, as I've met you recently, every day I learn something new about Holmes from someone who reveals information I had no idea of. after the book was published, I met the gentleman you know, Mark Potts, had been working for years on the connection with Holmes and Jack the Ripper, and all of a sudden we have handwriting experts in London and New York ready to state that the handwriting samples are the same, man, and it's amazing. So we're not ready to state it as a fact yet on the BBC or the New York Times, but we're getting very close.
Right. We just noticed today one of the Tribune articles saying that Holmes had some Confederate named Green in London. There's one connection right there.
You brought that to me. I had no idea of that before today, so thank you very much.
Yeah, every time I dip into the archives of this guy, it's quite a rabbit hole you fall down with him. So we're always finding new aliases, new schemes that he was involved in.
I think we've scratched the surface, which is one of the most interesting parts about him, which is why I try to keep a very open mind about the facts people say they have about him, because the more I dig, the more I find out, and just like you did today.
Yeah, and figuring out what's fact and what was just neighborhood gossip or police speculation at the time is basically impossible at this point.
There's a lot. You're exactly right. What we're trying to find and use now is direct forensic evidence of these claims, and we're close on three or four different issues, and I've got three or four experts helping me with it. That all of a sudden we're turning conjecture into direct trial evidence.
Now, you've actually been in the basement of the post office where the murder castle once was.
That was probably...
Is that right?
Yes, and that was probably the creepiest moment of my entire life. It was something else down there, and I just gave a talk at the ghost conference at the theater there in Chicago about going down into the basement with my friend Kim Estes.
So did anything happen while you were down there besides just that overwhelming, creepy feeling?
No, I didn't. In the book, I talk about concrete moving and faces. But to tell you the truth, in actuality, there was no ghosts. I did not see any moving films or, you know, the aspects. But there was no doubt in my mind there is something down there, because I went down a non-believer, Adam, and I came out totally a believer after that 1 hour. And there's no doubt in my mind, if there was a professional team that went down or a scientific team and recorded it properly, there might be something the world would be amazed to find out.
Yeah. Now, what's it like in the basement these days?
It was it took us 4 hours to get down there. It's not used by the post office. It's sealed off. They had too many alarms down there, and they have to write a report for each alarm that goes off. The custodian was not afraid to go down, but all the other employees were. And while we were waiting, we had three or four come up and say that, you know, legend has it that it is haunted. They hear strange things. When we went down, it was largely one color, same color, floor to ceiling of concrete hallways and a couple of openings with two tunnels of the original brick from Holmes's foundation of the castle.
Wow.
That was spooky. When we saw those tunnels, my friend Kim went up in the tunnel, and I didn't. And he came right back out, and he wouldn't go back in. So.
Wow.
But just touching it with your hand, the original brick, it was a little bit spooky. And like you and I talked about, I don't have the exact layout of how the basement and his torture chamber was compared to post offices now. Someone would have to do a more deeper study than I did, because the post office takes up probably three times more area than the castle did.
And also it takes up a lot of space that the castle wasn't on, going out into where Wallace Street would have been at the time.
Exactly.
But moving on, you also theorized that it wasn't actually Holmes who was hanged in 1896, that he actually faked his death. Can you elaborate on that a bit?
Yeah, I do not have any direct evidence on that yet. And one day we plan, when we get some serious money from book sales, we plan on exhuming that grave to do a DNA test on the remains inside the concrete. But my conjecture was based on two things. One, as you and I've talked, was about how he was buried. He was hung, or whoever was hung, was laid down in the coffin. It was filled with concrete. He said that was because he did not want grave robbers to steal organs from his body. And he was getting offers huge amounts of money back then for his, his brain.
I'm sure.
Right. The Pinkerton guards then supervised a mule train dragging that coffin filled with concrete to the cemetery, which had a ready-made hole three times the size of a normal grave hole. The coffin was set down into that, and that was filled with concrete. I hadn't heard of anything like that before, which made me curious, because this man, when you study what he was and what he believed in, he would not have cared about his body after death ever. He was
sure doesn't seem like it.
He would have known it. We're talking about carbon, not some right. spiritual thing he had to be concerned about. It raised the hair on my head to say that, when I used to have hair in my head, that this was a method, and a very successful one back then, for him to have someone else hung in his place, concrete hardened, and never to have the search. Can you imagine the search for him if they had gone in there and found out it wasn't him?
Right.
It would have rivaled Wilkes Booth after Lincoln. It would have been
huge. Who is also said to have faked it sometimes.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that,
there's a movement to get his grave opened up as well.
Interesting. That was one issue. The other issue, as you and I have also talked about, was the Mudgett curse, the Holmes curse. Anyone, almost anyone, who was associated with his trial, his arrest, his trial, and his execution, either suffered death or had terrible luck in their lives. Mm-hmm. And the New York Times wrote about this. The Chicago papers wrote about this.
Yep.
None of them ever thought to question, the coincidence level is too high here. Maybe we ought to start thinking, is there another reason for these people's misfortune?
Right, besides the idea that there's a curse or something, which is what people always say now.
Right, and between you and I, I'm not ready to believe in curses that like
okay.
that affect humans living now. So that's another issue that raised my curiosity level. So with the two, I thought it would be very easy. Let's dig it up. Let's do a DNA test, and I'll give a sample to compare and see who was really hung.
Yeah. So what would you speculate he would have done afterwards?
He would have been like...
Probably the same?
He would have been, Adam, you're going to love this, he would have been a kid in a candy store. Free to run and do anything he wanted without looking back, because he often mentioned that for the last 10 years, all he did was try not to get caught.
Right.
It's getting tighter and tighter, the noose. This would have allowed him to run free.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's also interesting when you read the writings he wrote and the interviews he gave in the few weeks before he was hanged. He's doing all this, going to great trouble to say that his appearance is changing and that he's got a double running around in the country someplace. It almost sounds like he's setting it up to be faked, so that if anybody sees that he looks a little different on the gallows, they won't question him.
You're very perceptive. To me, it's very obvious that he was playing a game with the reporters that came to his cell every day to get the next day's, you know, article.
Right.
And he was playing them like a violin. And this thing about appearance and how he was starting to look like a devil. And you read all his comments that he wrote in his memoir.
Oh, right.
And the articles. It was it seemed very obvious to me.
Mm-hmm. All right. So what's going to be the next step for you? What's the next thing you're looking into?
Well, we're working right now on the Ripper issue. As you may imagine, there's a lot of anger already raised from people who think...
Right, because everybody already has their candidate for the Ripper.
And to tell you the truth, I don't know why they're so angry at me for raising this possibility, especially when we're offering to prove it with direct evidence. So we're going to work on the Ripper. We're going to see if we can get permission from the state of Pennsylvania. I haven't researched how to do it legally yet, about exhuming the concrete, digging it up, and doing a DNA. And then when the Englewood post office is closed, and I think that's just around the corner with our budget problems, I want to see if we can establish a scientific excavation and do it properly about what's down in there, and maybe find out some things about American history we didn't know before.
Yeah. All right. Well, the book is called Bloodstains. It is available online all over the place. We're going to have a link to it on the Chicago Unbelievable page. Jeff, thank you very much for joining us. You want to look around the premises here while we're here?
I'd love to hang with you guys a little bit.
All right. Well, I've got Aaron right here is connected.
Hello, Aaron.
This is Terry.
Hi, Terry. He's
over here someplace. Hi. And this is Hector. Hector and I have been working together for years.
Hi, Hector.
For years. And this is the location that we found. Over around here, there is a brick embedded in the ground someplace. It's kind of buried now, but I did have an archaeologist tell me it was an 1890s brick. But based on the 1914 fire insurance maps, the more likely location for the glass bending plant would have been over here, where this garage is now, that Hector is pointing the laser grid at. So this is generally the area where weird stuff happens. We have weird stuff happen to us here quite a bit. One night, Hector and I drove a bus into here, and there were chickens running around, which you don't see in Chicago too much. Another night, there were three hawks with dead doves in their mouths. And every now and then, we just get that feeling you get sometimes at places that are supposed to be haunted. So we're out here tonight to see what we can find. Kind of walking slowly because we got three people connected to the equipment. Does anybody else have a question for Jeff? All right, we're kind of moving into the parking lot area now. I think we're going to be setting up camp and just seeing what happens. The field over here tends to freak a lot of people out. People tend to get freaked out in there, or they get freaked out by the rats. There's a lot of rats out here. And here we've got an empty... This car has been sitting abandoned for some time now. The door has been open for days. It's much nicer than any car I ever owned.
You know, Adam, I'd love to hear your thoughts on... I had not known about a glass-bending factory that Holmes could have owned. Mm-hmm. And when you told me that there are people who believe more people were killed or their bodies taken care of after he killed them here than they did at the murder castle.
Yeah, I almost feel like the murder castle was almost set up as a decoy. Because for all the stuff they found down there, the pits and the bones and stuff, they dug for 2 weeks and didn't really find too much that was really conclusive. But during that 2 weeks, Patrick Quinlan, the janitor, came out to the glassbending factory on Sobieski Street and carted away loads and loads of stuff, including a gigantic furnace. So that's my latest pet theory, is that this place might have actually been the primary body dump.
Interesting. What would be like the temperature they would need to have a furnace down there to handle glass? Did you do any research on that?
No, I haven't looked into that yet. I know that the furnace that they had here was 6 feet by 8 feet and ran the entire length of the building. And I'm not really sure how easily you could get something like that into a basement without the rest of the building noticing it.
Right.
Given all the people who actually lived inside of the castle during that whole period. So that's my latest theory. And once again, like all of this stuff, there's really no evidence one way or the other. All we can really do is speculate with so much of this.
That's why I'm so interested in one day doing a professional scientific excavation of the post office. Besides setting it up as a park or something to, like I say, I'm a believer now. I'd kind of like to set those tortured souls free one day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we've definitely got more forensic gear nowadays. Back then, Holmes could plausibly say that the bloodstains were just paint. He could plausibly say that the bones were just chicken bones, and the doctors could look and say it was most likely human, but forensics just wasn't quite there yet.
Interesting. I'm not up on that stuff, but I do like watching you all use it.
Yeah. I'm not the one you want to have doing the DNA tests either. I'm just the historian around here. I kind of leave the physics to the physicists. But yeah, that's a very good point, figuring out just how hot you have to get a furnace to get glass to bend. It's generally thought that he never actually bent any glass inside of the factory.
Okay.
That's where we are now. So what should we do, guys? You want to just set up camp someplace? All right, Hector is messing with the laser grid. I'm going to get out the camera in a little bit so we can start documenting stuff around here. But, well, Jeff, thank you very much for joining us.
Well, good luck, and thank you very much. I can't wait to see your show you get it finished, and I've enjoyed it.
All right, it'll be an audio show up on iTunes, hopefully in just a couple of days.
Hey, and maybe when I go up to Pennsylvania, think about going with me, and when we go see where the concrete is, do you have equipment that can find that block of concrete in the ground?
I might be able to borrow a thermal cam. That might be able to do it.
All right. That'd be kind of, I think that.
I know archaeologists have really interesting ways of figuring out where things are buried, too.
Okay.
I got one of my archaeologist buddies. You could take him to a graveyard where all the gravestones have been gone for 100 years. He can tell you where the bodies were just by what's on the ground.
Oh, very good. Very good.
So, yeah, I'm sure we could find the space.
Well, good luck tonight and find something, all right?
All right, we will.
All right, goodbye to
everybody.
Thanks a
lot, Jeff.
Thanks a lot.
All right. We just got off of the Skype with Jeff. We're back on our regular microphone now, and we're just still kind of wandering around the area. Hector, you've been wandering around for the last 20 minutes. Any areas seem especially hot to you?
Not particularly. It's just generally creepy today. This area right here, the little field, is mm-hmm. what I've been concentrating on.
That's not really most likely where the place was, but it seems to be where people get especially freaked out.
Yeah,
we wonder maybe that's where the ashes were scattered.
Maybe. Who knows? The fence here has been knocked down.
Yeah.
There's an abandoned car, which doesn't help the whole idea of it being creepy over here. But
right. That door has been open for at least the last week.
Yeah.
Since I started doing tours again and coming out here.
But since the fence is, since it's so overgrown, it's just like, I'm almost drawn to it. It's kind of creepy.
Yeah. Well, shall we wander in there and see what happens?
All right. You ready for this?
I think I'm ready for this. All right, Hector and I are about to venture into the field, which tends to really frighten a lot of people over here by the H.H. Holmes body dump on the former Sobieski Street.
Are you getting the grid at all?
Yeah, that's about all I'm getting, really. Oh. All right. Okay.
Fun for me, I'm wearing shorts. Large stone here.
Yeah.
Or not a... What the...
Pile of mulch or something. Yeah.
Pile of mulch.
Random pile of mulch.
Very.
Sandbag. Part of an old fence. Bits of concrete all over the place. Parts of the fence. Old bricks. Always gotta wonder with the old bricks. That's exactly what the building was supposed to be made out of. This is about, I think, as far as I can tread. Without a machete or something.
Why did I bring...
All right, folks, this is Adam cutting in during the editing process. In the next couple of seconds as we're wandering through here, I can kind of hear some weird noises. It's probably just me muttering under my breath, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. We never know what kind of audio we're going to be picking up around here.
Headlight?
Oh, nice. Good idea. All right, we're in the middle of the field now. Hector's thinking there's something weird over about this area over here.
There's a clearing right there.
There is. There's a clearing of some sort. I don't know how we could even access it from here. So we're kind of fenced in by giant shrubbery.
Which, that's what I find so odd. It's like giant shrubbery completely around surrounding that spot.
Right.
Which is empty.
Uh-huh.
You going to try to get in there? Seriously, this is weird. It's probably something natural, so I'm not gonna try to say it's got to do with haunting.
Right.
But.
It's a little late in the year for fireflies, don't you think?
You saw some?
There's a couple of them out there, yeah. Something's glowing yellow.
Yellow? Fireflies don't glow yellow.
Yeah, they do.
No, they glow green.
Yeah. Huh. You can hear the crickets. You'd never know you were half a block from Damon Elston and Fullerton, the worst intersection in the city right here.
Yeah. Are you in?
Okay. Terry is in. He has made it over the hedges and heading towards the clearing. It's difficult for us to get a decent photograph of this because it's rather dark. There's headlights that are backlighting it, which is making it tricky.
Camera with you?
I'm gonna see if I can get out to where Drew is here. I'm gonna go for it, yeah. If I can.
I like him.
Yeah.
I like him. He's resourceful.
Yeah. Okay, climbing up the busted fence.
Oh, that's how we do it. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, I'm in. I'm over the hedges. Yeah, there is nothing but nasty old bricks out here. Old bricks and concrete. These look like more recent bricks than 1890s, for the most part. Okay, something just flicked my headband.
For real?
Yeah. Okay, something just flicked my headband.
What?
Something just flicked my headband. I'm not kidding. Okay, should we head over to there? Okay. Okay, so now we've got a choice to make. Do we stay here or I'm getting my headband flicked? Let's go to where the sounds are if I got a recorder. Yeah. Yeah. Let's see if it flicks on you. You getting anything on the K2?
Just fired it up.
Okay. Yeah, it's a K2. K2, an EMF reader. It's not usually the most useful ghost hunting gear when you're in the city, because you could get a jump on that from, like, a radio tower or something. But, yeah, he's also in the middle of a clearing right now.
That's true. All right, I'm going to head over towards him.
Okay.
She's going to show you where she heard the sounds, okay?
Okay, all right. All right, what you hearing, Aaron?
All right, so what I'm hearing over here, kind of by the building more...
Mm-hmm. This is where it actually happened.
Right. I'm hearing there's a lot of sticks and stuff like that. We've seen rats. That doesn't concern me too much. But I'm hearing, like, steps in the gravel. Like someone's kicking the gravel when they walk.
Really?
And I'm turning around because I'm assuming to see rats. I don't see anything.
Right. And rats don't usually kick the gravel much.
Yeah. I've seen rats and I don't hear any sound when I see them running around.
Right.
So I've heard them in here, like, stepping on these sticks out here. I've heard these... breaking behind me.
Okay.
When I turn around, it seems to stop. So I took a few pictures. I don't see anything coming up on them right now. But,
I'm going to pause for just a second and switch the mics over to surround sound. All right, we are now on surround sound using all four microphones. See how good of a picture I can get of this. All right, you know what I'm going to do? Actually, there's this, massive pile of gravel right here. I'm going to take a shot of it. I'm going to set the recorder in here, and we'll let you people listening along at home see if you can hear anything. All right. All right. If you hear anything that I might have missed, by all means, write us at Chicago Unbelievable and let us know. You can find our email and contact info on ChicagoUnbelievable.com. You see, I hear that Terry and Hector look like they're having some fun with the laser grid out here. I'm going to see if I can join them. Now that I know I can get into the field, I'll try it again. Whoa. All right. What's happening?
Explain what was going on.
Lots of high spikes on the K2 meter.
Okay.
They seem to be kind of moving around, not necessarily from one location.
Okay.
And kind of whenever we talk about it, it kind of stops. But
yeah, that's the weird thing. As soon as he says it, it stops.
Yeah, well, there do seem to be like audio sensitive things out here. Remember the light over there, Hector?
Yeah.
There's a light under the balcony. It's totally burned out right now. We should walk over to it. What?
I just saw something move. Like that way.
Like a rat?
No. Or? Like something like white just went that way.
Okay.
And it wasn't the flashlight.
Right.
It was something low, too. It was like, mm-hmm. like low and white. Just went that way.
Yeah. Oh, you know, somebody did try to open the couch tomb last night.
No kidding.
Yeah, a drunk jumped the fence and tried to open the couch to him.
Arrested?
No, but you know, this didn't. Nothing happened. You couldn't move, budge the door.
You getting sounds again?
All right, we're running right about to the edge of the limit of how long I like our podcast to go, so we're actually going to cut off here and make this into a two-part. We'll be back hopefully later this week with part two of our investigation of the H.H. Holmes Glassbending Factory site on Seeley Avenue in Chicago, the former Sobieski Street. Find out pictures and more about this at ChicagoUnbelievable.com, including information about Jeff's book. Check us out, ChicagoUnbelievable.com.
Radio Land, does your radio station playing enough of the revolving door all stars? Does your neighborhood give you the creeps?